Today, we're thrilled to have Sheila Bair, former chair of the FDIC and recent author of a series of children's books designed to teach young children about money. Hi, Sheila. Welcome to the Crypto Rabbit Hole. It's great to have you.
Hi, Alex. Thanks for having me. I love the title, by the way, Rabbit Hole. That's good.
Thank you. So, Sheila, by way of my background, and as most of my audience knows, I started the Crypto Rabbit Hole in the spring of 2021 because I felt that financial and crypto literacy were things that just weren't being taught in schools and that they were something I really had to seek out on my own. So I wanted to create this platform to make the process easier for everyone else, which is why I'm really excited to have you on here today. So apart from you being a leader in government as former chair of the FDIC, one of the main reasons I wanted to have you on my show is because I think we're both out here trying to accomplish the same thing, which is to promote youth financial literacy. Right. So personally, I've been lucky enough to have parents who are educated on financial literacy and was able to learn about it over the dinner table or just through talking to them over the years. But many kids aren't as lucky. So thanks for agreeing to do this because I think it's really important to provide this knowledge to as many kids as possible. So let's dive in.
Okay.
So do you mind quickly running us through your background and then maybe talking about what inspired you to start writing these children's books about money?
Sure. So I've spent most of my career in government and finance. I got my Washington career starting with working for Senator Bob Dole back on the Senate Judiciary Committee. So I was actually a civil rights lawyer for a while before I transitioned into financial services. But he was a good friend and mentor throughout my life. It was sad to see his passing last week. He was really the greatest of the greatest generation. And I think he also gave me, through his mentorship, provided a good focus for me in terms of public benefit and protecting people who need to help protect. They can't protect themselves always. I don't view government as something you help the well-heeled or the rich. It's really to help the public. And I think in my government service, I tried to do that. And now that I'm out of government, serving on corporate boards and advisory roles, and as an author, I try to do that in a different way through writing books about money basics for kids. And even though the books are more for elementary school kids, actually teenagers like the books too, parents like the books too. So hopefully we could talk a little bit about that more later. But yeah, I've spanned pretty much all segments of financial services. I was the chair of the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, a banking regulator, steered the agency during the financial crisis. I was the Assistant Secretary for Financial Institutions at Treasury, also a job involving banking policy. Before that, I was the Senior Vice President for Public Affairs and Government Relations at the New York Stock Exchange. That was one of my private sector roles, so worked on the securities market side. I was also a commissioner and the acting chair of the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, so I learned a bit about derivatives regulation. And now one of my boards, I'm on the board of a company called Paxos, which has it's a company that is developing use cases for blockchain and also has a stable coin, is an issuer of a stable coin and runs a small cryptocurrency exchange. So that's my career in a nutshell. It spanned a lot in terms of experiences. But now I'm really focused on trying to help young people in particular understand money basics so they can protect themselves. I think there are a lot of books out there about here, get rich quick and here's how to make $1 million and all that kind of thing. Those are not the kinds of books I write. I write books to try to empower people so that they do not lose money, that they can protect themselves against, all the traps that can be out there in the financial services sector. And that's really what my books are about.
So in your opinion, what's the right age to start learning about money?
Pre-K. kids get money. I mean, money's counting pennies is a wonderful way to start teaching math. Playing store, grocery store, buying and selling, pretend goods at a store. I think those are all great ways for kids to start learning about money. And they get money at an early age. You need to tap into that early inquisitiveness. Allowances too, I think giving children a small allowance, again, even from a very early age. With my kids, we always, every time they got an allowance, they also got a little bit extra that automatically went into a piggy bank. So they were building save, it's kind of their mini 401k, if you will, or automated savings plan. So, but they always got a little bit more that, we'd fill up the piggy bank and then take it to the bank. So, and I think it's important for parents to start those kinds of money lessons and skills very, very early.
Do you mind giving like a basic example of kind of a lesson or an mm-hmm. example from your book that's resonated with kids?
Yeah. So I think that the books are fun and humorous. I don't want to scare kids. There's some pretty scary stories in financial services. There's some tragic stories with people getting into trouble. And so I don't, for young children, I don't want to engage them in really sad stories. So I use fictional characters. Some of them are based on the Galapagos Islands. Another part is Princess Persephone. She's a princess on Ganymede Moon, an ice moon of Jupiter. And so these are pretend fantasies. So kids, these aren't real people with, you know, real losses, but they exhibit behaviors that kids can see how self-destructive, right, from a financial perspective they can be. Yeah. So for instance, Billy the Borrowing Blue-Footed Booby actually is about a kind of an extreme buy now, pay later scheme, which just coincidentally, because BNPL is really all the rage now. And for any young people listening, I'd be really careful in using BNPL. But it's about a booby who wants to buy an umbrella to protect himself from rain for his nap after his lunch. And he goes to a sly seal who sells really expensive umbrellas, which he cannot afford. And so Seal tells him, well, you can have it now and wait a month to pay me, but the cost is going to double if you do. So he doesn't think about it. He buys on impulse, which is one of the worst things you can do, especially borrowing to buy on impulse. Has the umbrella, waits a month, catches a bunch of sardines, but instead of paying Seal back, he sees another, you know, his friend Arlene, the giant tortoise, has this really cool solar-powered fan, and he wants one. So he goes and buys that instead of paying off his debt. This keeps going and going until the debt balloons and it gets into a lot of trouble. It has a happy ending. But kids, I love reading that book with kids. They just giggle and laugh, and that silly booby. And here he goes. He's borrowing again. His debt's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So they laugh, and they're not threatened or intimidated by it. But they can see his silliness. And I think that sticks, you know. And the nice thing about kids' picture books, too, is they read them over and over again. So it really, really sinks in that, you know, buying on impulse, borrowing for an impulse buy is really kind of one of the worst things you can do. And then not paying the debt back on time, that really will get you in trouble fast. Unfortunately, a lot of people do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a super important lesson that you really can't learn early enough.
No, exactly.
So I said earlier, I kind of started this whole thing because I found that I had to kind of, in order to learn, I had to go through it on my own. You know, it's not really taught in schools. So in your opinion, why is it so hard for young people to like find these resources? Why is it?
Oh, I know it. Isn't it? It's really hard. And a lot of the content that's out there is really boring. You know, it's well-intentioned, it's informational. It is really boring. And a kid's eyes will glaze over so fast. So that's why I use story and humor to try to reach them. So it's just a good read. Whether they're learning something or not, it's a good read. And I think that's important. Some of the other content out there is actually more troubling because it's really promoting products, right? So it's not, here's how to use a credit card, here's how to invest in the stock market. And at some point, people do need to learn that. I don't think young kids need to learn that. But when they do, it should be presented in a way of, you know, responsible usage, not, you know, pushing financial products. And, you know, because I've actually seen financial education curricula that push kids, get a credit card, use it, build that credit score. And those are just all the wrong lessons. There's plenty of time later to build your credit history. And the good news now with technology, we're starting to get away from credit scores and actually using something called cash flow underwriting. So when people want to qualify for a loan, they can just on a confidential basis provide their banking data and show that they can responsibly, you know, manage their cash flows. You don't have to rely on these credit scores, which have a lot of problems. So, I am concerned that a lot of the financial education content out there is really product promotion. It's not, I'm trying to protect people from the bad use of products. Some of it is promoting products. And I think parents and teachers need to be cautious of that and really scrutinize any material that they provide in the classroom or to their children at home. I had a struggle first getting published years ago when I published my first book because there was just a lot of skepticism with publishers. And Albert Whitman, which is a good, 100-year-old children's book publisher based in Chicago, been around, great reputation, focused on educational markets and was willing to publish my first two books. And they've done well. And now we have six and counting, and it's been a good partnership. But yeah, it takes some convincing with the publishers too. They just don't think kids are interested about it or it's appropriate for kids, and they're just really, really wrong on that.
I think it doesn't even matter if how interested they are in money, because at many of these young ages, they don't even know what they're reading. But as long as they enjoy, you know, the story part of it, the lesson will seep in too, subconsciously.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's absolutely right.
The lessons you teach in your book, do any of them, in your opinion, relate, like any of these money principles, relate to basic life principles?
I think they absolutely do. So much of this is like, just understanding risk, you know, look before you leap. So another one of my books, Princess Persephone Loses the Castle, is about Princess Persephone who falls for a home repair scam. Her dad's away and a siding salesman comes to the castle and she's cold and she mortgages the castle to pay for this really expensive flimsy siding and just jumped into it. Again, acting on impulse, didn't read the contract, didn't have the king's lawyers, you know, her dad's lawyers read the contract, just jumped right in and ended up losing the castle. And fortunately, she had the Ganymede equivalent of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau to go to for help. They got her castle back for her. But it is, you know, look before you leap, understand your risk, be patient, don't buy on impulse, don't act on impulse. Think through what you're doing before you act, live within your means. Those are all kind of basic life lessons that are applicable to other things, not just money. Yeah.
I mean, I'd argue that's applicable to almost everything in life. So as the federal government, you know, continues to borrow money and just kicking the can down on paying their debt, how can we teach our kids to be financially responsible?
It's such a good question. It really is. It's really encouraged a debt culture. It celebrates just trying to push inflation.
Yeah,
you're actually encouraging people to borrow from their future to pay now, right? Because the price could go up. And so I've been troubled by this for a long time. I think it's Paul Volcker was also a good friend, and he was very concerned as well with the Fed's obsession with generating inflation and using money supply to manipulate the economy. And so I do think it's creating a lot of bad lessons. It supports the debt culture. It, you know, borrow from your future to pay for things now. Culturally, it's not setting a good example. It's been going on too long. It's, you know, monetary policy is something you should do in short spurts to get us through a crisis situations. But to do this, it's just become the status quo. The trap now, we've got inflation. They're going to have to need to raise rates probably. A lot of people who borrowed too much money are going to have a hard time, you know, refinancing their debt. A lot of companies are overlevered. It really does has created a cultural problem for us that I think, well, you know, we're Americans, we're smart, we're tough, we'll get through it. But I think it's going to be a rocky road. And hopefully, you know, this will be a lesson to central bankers going forward. Is this protracted accommodative monetary supply has not been good for culture or the economy.
And speaking more about the country we live in now, with interest rates near zero, like, how would you coach kids my age to save and grow their money?
It's hard. You should put in a bank account, you could get your 25 basis points if you're lucky. So I think if it's long-term savings, put it in a stock index fund. I really think that's the safest thing to do. I think our kids, they're both young adults now, and they basically stay in index funds. They do a little bit of stock picking, but they research the company. It's generally a company they've used. They tested their products. And I think that's okay too. But I think that's really broad-based index funds with maybe a few individual stocks, if you have the time to research and, you know, make sure you understand what you're buying. I know you're focused on crypto, and I know a lot of young people are getting into crypto. I don't think that's smart. I think it's very bubbly right now. And a lot of young people are buying it with leverage. They're borrowing money to buy it. And it's highly volatile. There's really no, it's not the intrinsic value of, say, a Bitcoin. That's probably the one that's got the best chance of maintaining value of any of them. We still don't know. It's still highly volatile. There's a lot of manipulation going on. The markets are not regulated. So I would really stay away from it. I know it's tempting. It's new. It's glamorous. A lot of people are making money, but I tell you, a lot of people are losing money too.
Yeah.
And if you want to, you know, you want to build wealth reliably and safely, just put it in a stock index fund. I really think that's the best place for it.
In your opinion, does crypto fall into that get rich quick culture that you described?
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, Bitcoin got its start after the great financial crisis when central banks were printing all this money to bail out the financial sector, and people were upset with banks, rightfully so, but they were also worried about central banks, you know, devaluating fiat currencies by printing all this additional money to bail out the financial system. So that's really where it got its start. And there again, with the protracted near zero interest rates ever since the financial crisis of 2008-2009, I think, you know, young people in particular are worried about, you know, is fiat currency real? Does that have real value? And yes, I think it does. It's better than the alternatives. Again, I think our governments need to stop borrowing so much, and they need to tighten their belt, and the central banks need to start pulling back as well. And there could be some tough times with that, but that's still fiat's going to be a lot better. There's at least a government behind it, a taxing authority behind it. You don't have any of that with cryptocurrency. But yeah, the growth of these markets has absolutely been tied to monetary actions. And then but there's a lot of speculation, period, right? So it's just not, there's speculation in the stock market. Still think that's the best place, broad-based funds, but can't say those values aren't inflated as well. Commodities, real estate, everything's inflated right now. And the reason is because the banks have pushed too much money into the economy. There are not opportunities for real productive investment. Mm-hmm. So the money's just going in speculation. Plus, people are borrowing to speculate because interest rates are so low. So we've got ourselves in a bit of a bind, and it's going to take a few years to get out of it. I just hope we can do it without too much financial pain and tragedy.
Talking more about crypto, clearly you're not in support of it short term. Do you see any value in it, like long term?
Yeah.
Potential hedge against inflation?
Yeah. So I think. So let's talk about the technology. I'm very bullish about the technology. Using distributed ledgers for clearing and settlement for payments, I think that's huge. And it frustrates me. You know, the company where I'm on the board and many others are trying to develop this technology to modernize our payment system. So I can just, through the use of a digital currency, I can just send money directly to you. I don't have to go through a bank intermediary with all the, you know, have a checking account with all the costs that entails. You have a digital wallet. I have a digital wallet. I can just send it to you. And I think eventually that's what we're going to get. And that will be hugely democratizing for our payment system. Clearing securities, clearing really any property transaction where I'm selling something to do to transfer the funds and the title directly through a distributed ledger, get rid of all these intermediaries. I think that is transformative, and at some point it's going to happen. So I'm very bullish about the technology, but people need to distinguish the technology from the coins, right? And so Bitcoin, yeah. I kind of think because it's unique, it was the first, like gold, it will probably hold value. I don't own any of it because it's too volatile for me, too risky for me. I do think there's a good chance it will hold value. Some of these others are just fads. You know, some of these NFTs, they're just fads. And I do think, you know, short-term or long-term, young people, anybody should just stay away from them.
What do you see it taking for, you know, banks and, you know, governments to start acknowledging crypto and having them on their balance sheets and, you know, to their...
Well, they should have done it a long time ago. I mean, because it's just, these markets are unregulated completely. There's no regulator with clear authority in the U.S. You know, we have this... You know, we got one regulator for securities, one for commodities, one for banking, and crypto doesn't fit neatly into any of it. So you've got kind of a wild west going on now. And government is not really doing much to develop the technology itself. I have advocated a long time the government itself should use distributed ledgers to get emergency payments to people. So you see what kind of problems the government had in getting pandemic relief payments to households during the crisis. There's still something like, you know, $40 billion plus of assistance that Congress authorized almost a year ago, for rental assistance for people, you know, who lost their jobs and needed to make up for back rent. We've had a lot of problems getting cash out. And then there's a lot of fraud, too, which, again, a distributed ledger with the security features around a distributed ledger,
you can get rid
of a lot of fraud, too. So I do think government should focus on that. The Fed could do it with a central bank digital currency. The Treasury could do it. They could create their own digital version of a dollar. But there's just so much fear around this technology. And I think part of it's from coming from the banking system, because the banks are worried about being disintermediated. But there's such huge promise for public benefit, especially in government payments. And I do wish somebody in government start focusing on that. So far, they have not.
How do we unwind out of the situation where, you know, like interest rates are really low and rising inflation? Do you think the government like genuinely intends to act with more urgency?
Yeah, I wish I had a good answer for you. I don't. It's hard to see how we get out of this. I think they're going to have to raise rates. I hope they can do it somewhat gradually, because I think a sharp, you know, rise in interest rates is going to create a lot of defaults for people who have too much debt already and need to keep refinancing that debt. They won't be able to afford the higher interest rates. Valuations are so high, as we talked about earlier. It's not just cryptocurrency, it's commodities, it's stocks, it's bonds, everything is inflated right now. So as interest rates, and it's all being driven by interest rates, it's not, you know, real value. So as interest rates go up, those valuations are going to go down. And again, people exposed to those markets are going to lose money. And that might, unless it's a long-term investment, most of us hopefully can just ride it out. But, you know, if it's a short-term investment, if they're relying on it to pay a bill or whatever, you could see a lot more defaults from that too. The banking system could be stressed as well because of losses, market losses, and defaults by over-leveraged borrowers. So it's hard to see how this ends well. I don't think as worried as I am about inflation, I'm more worried about a financial crisis. And so I do think they should go somewhat gradually and maybe tolerate inflation a little longer to try to do this more smoothly.
Like, how do you see this affecting my generation in the next 5 years?
I'm a member of the baby boomer generation, and I'm not proud of what we've handled the economy or the financial system. I think it's going to have an impact. I think the good news is probably young people, their primary income comes from jobs, they work for it. So they're not relying on investment income or anything like that for their living. So a lot of this may just hit financial markets, and actually the wealthier people who have benefited from all this asset inflation, they may be the ones to take it more than, you know, just regular working folk. So that's my hope anyway, unless it triggers a recession and then we're going to have problems. So I think ride it out, you know, be prudent and responsible and risk averse with your own financial investments. Ride it out, be active politically. Congress doesn't pay attention to budget deficits anymore. It drives me crazy.
Yeah.
This thing, deficits don't matter anymore. You know, at some point they do. And we've reached that point. We're probably past that point. So I think mobilizing too, with younger groups and organizations. I'm an advisor to the P.G. Peterson Foundation. They've done a lot of good work over the years on fiscal issues and deficit spending and the risk involved with that. So I think being politically active is also going to be part of the solution for young people to try to get this corrected.
I think we've come near the end of our time. So Sheila, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us in the Crypto Rabbit Hole. This was super educational. I really enjoyed it. Where can people learn more about you, and also where can they buy your series of books?
Well, thank you for asking. So you can follow me on Twitter. I have a Twitter account. I actually have two. The main one is Sheila Bear 2013. I also have a LinkedIn account, so I try to post similar things on both. So you can follow me in either or both. My books are pretty much available any Amazon, Barnes and Noble, any of the major retailers. Should be able to sell it to you, at least online. There's a lot of bookstores too. So good. And if you can't afford it, go to the library and check one out. If you can't find, keep it in shop. I don't want you to spend more money than you have either, because I do care about young people and their financial future. And I want to be protective of their money too. So, but I hope you enjoy the books. And again, I said, even for older kids and young adults, they're funny books. People enjoy them. And I think everybody learns a bit from them. So, Alex, thank you for having me. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Yeah, of course. Me too. So I encourage everyone watching to look into that. And as always, make sure to subscribe to Crypto Rabbit Hole on YouTube. Follow me on Twitter at @AP_rabbithole. And you can always find us at CryptoRabbitHole.net. So thanks for watching.
Great. Thanks, Alex. Bye-bye then.
Thank you.